Who are you?
Tim Callender.
Summer Brooks.
Brett Filipek.
We host the Babylon podcast.
What do you want?
To study and discuss the Babylon 5 universe.
Where are you going?
To discover every scrap of B5 memorabilia.
Who do you serve, and who do you trust?
And welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I'm Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
I am Brett Filipek, I think.
You sound tired, Brett.
I'm getting over some kind of chest cold thing that I somehow inherited from my children, because that's what they do. I give them money and love. They give me sickness and disease.
Yes.
They're like little disease factories. Yeah, and heartbreak.
I keep hearing stories of school children carrying home the phlegm monster to invade their parents, and it's amusing. Going, I was fine until those damn kids came home from school.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah,
it is very true. I'm telling you. So if I sound tired, that's why.
Okay. We'll cut you some slack, but we have excellent news. Great news.
And what is that excellent news, Summer?
Bester's got a star.
Yes.
Yes, he does.
We're so happy for Walter Koenig. He got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, which from what little I've read about it is sort of a it's a popularity contest more than it's not like an Oscar where people vote and say, okay, it's time for you to, you know, you've done great work and here's your Oscar. It's like, because in the list of stars, Richard Burton was also getting a star. Burton's been dead for how many years?
Yeah. How long overdue is that? Now, I remember, was it a few years ago when we were discussing how he'd been turned down for approval on the list? It sounded like all you needed to do was pay 10 grand and get a wink, wink, nudge, nudge from somebody on the committee and they'd approve you.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression I got of it as well.
But this time around, they're saying that the Star Trek fans finally all, you know, clamored, and, you know, you don't want a couple of hundred of them gathering at one place, you know, looking angry, you know, giving you the stink eye. That's just not good.
Very true.
Here's a quote. I'm actually at this looking at StarTrek.com in the article, and this is what Koenig says about it. He says that StarTrek.com actually informed him of the big news, but at first he thought that we were mistaken. That's a quote from StarTrek.com. I didn't believe you, Koenig admitted. That is, I thought it was one of those erroneous rumors that occasionally gets spread. I assumed that they would contact those elected before the public announcement, and evidently that's not the case. He goes on to say, I certainly do feel honored. It means that my modest body of work has some meaning and has been acknowledged. That's always a nice feeling.
Oh, I hope it would be really, really cool if on his star there's like a Star Trek communicator beside a Psycor logo.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
That'd be awesome.
Anybody out in Hollywood, grab a photo, send it on to the Babcast. We'll get it up on the website. Matt Groening was also honored. And Adam West. It's an interesting kind of little
very eclectic group there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Barry White also got a star. I think his weighed about 300 pounds, though, and they had to reinforce the concrete.
Ba-dum-bum-tsh.
Yes, I went there. Okay. Sorry. The sound of crickets you hear is a response to Tim's really lame joke. So, anyways, speaking of lame jokes, we're deep geeking on Warzone. everything that has to do with that, including why it was made, from what little we know so far.
We are.
Are we?
Oh.
Okay, I think we need to take a break and have a discussion.
Yeah, we're confused.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that.
Hi, this is Kevin Batchelder. And this is the Saturday B Movie Reel.
Do something. Shoot it. Shoot it.
That about describes it, yeah.
All right, everybody stay here.
We look specifically at the Sci-Fi Channel's original movies. You know the ones. The ones that air on Saturday night.
Be known throughout the ages as an instant classic.
We need a bigger gator!
Limb cutting, yes. And blood squirting from...
Flying limbs, I called it in my notes.
What could go wrong?
We look on a regular basis at the movies as they come out, and since there have been over 200 of them, we do go back and look at many of them that are now out on DVD. By this point, I had completely forgotten any semblance of seeing if this actually makes any sense from a plot point of view. So come on by, get involved, and have some fun.
Check us out at SaturdayBMovieReel.com.
Our future depends on it. Make it safe.
Digging down to the minutest arcani of the B5 universe, this is Deep Geeker.
So apparently we're talking about Warzone tonight.
Yes, and in true manner of Crusade, there's been a great deal of confusion about the running order of the episode that we're supposed to deep geek on. I think it's only appropriate that we all got scrambled on that.
Indeed.
And according to the list that all the fans clamored for in their infinite wisdom and perfect judgment, tonight's episode is Warzone.
Okay.
So, yeah, so there we go. Now, as we all recall, this was the introductory episode to Crusade. So it's kind of bizarre to watch it at this point in time, going through it again, because it's the origin story that's not really the origin story. Or I guess it is, but it's just kind of, I don't know. I had mixed feelings about it watching it again and recalling my thoughts about it originally.
Hmm.
Well,
okay.
Because when I remember when it first premiered, when Crusade first premiered, and we'd already gotten at least some insight to the fact that there was some behind the scenes shenanigans going on and that they reshot the, pilot, if you will, for the show, and that was to feature the new uniforms and all that, and they wanted more fist fights, and JMS didn't like that they wanted more fist fights, but he gave him a fist fight at the beginning when Gideon has to put down a mutiny. And I remember watching at the time and thinking it didn't seem all that bad. I mean, some of it was kind of stilted, and you know, some of it was like, well, you know, the gratuitous getting the party together, to use the D&D phrase, but I didn't think it was all that bad, but it is kind of odd seeing it at this time around toward the end of the run, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it was supposed to be first, and then it was not first, and then...
JMS's list, it is absolute dead last.
I still don't see how
that
works.
It was Hino anyways, though.
I mean, yeah. in terms of story continuity, how can it be last?
Well, I think for JMS, it's last is because he didn't want to do it. You know, for him, Racing the Night was the premiere, and it was just dropping you into the story and letting you go. I mean, what you... From where he stands, from what I remember reading in What the Hell Happened, Volume 1, in effect, he liked the idea that you got to know who Gideon was by that conversation where he wagers the Drazi that he'll find a cure for. or else he'll spend the last year of the Drak plague incubation time shooting down his own ships. So that tells you, you know, in the whole idea of, you know, show me, don't tell me, you get to know that Gideon is a guy who takes risks, that he will do whatever he thinks is right to get the job done, that he's going to piss off his superiors, but he's ultimately, you know, he ultimately knows that he's doing it for good. In Warzone, there's the conversation he has with a senator, and he says, I am a guy who takes chances, and I will piss people off, but I will get the job done. Now, obviously, Gary Cole delivers it with a lot better grace than that.
Really? Because I thought that was dead on. I really did. I couldn't tell the difference between you and Gary there for a second. Well, I'm gonna tell you.
That's because I'm good. I mean, what can I say? But you know, it's Warzone is very much, you know, they have the meeting where we are introduced to Dr. Chambers, who's been cooling her heels on Mars for the last few days, and before they can talk any more about it, the meeting is interrupted by Dorina in the field trying to find Captain Gideon. And then Dorina's all like, well, you know, you're going to be going places and you need to get into things. And there isn't a lock that I can't pick. And again, it's like, here's my stat sheet, to use the D&D metaphor. And I mean, because that's what it feels like. Yeah, I mean, that's really what it feels like.
Yeah.
You know? It would have been better if she'd come up with, I have plus 10 charisma. And
you
should see my XP. So I'm going to tell you right now, I got awesome XP right now.
I have a plus 18 stealth, and
right, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, that is very.
I
much
can't fun. Believe I never picked that up.
Yeah, although although to be honest with you, had they put that first, it probably would have. Again, I'm going to draw an analogy to something in the Star Trek universe because I'm really familiar with that universe. But when Star Trek Voyager, the first 2 hour episode of Star Trek Voyager ever, they did that exact same thing. Like they tried, like the writers, you almost felt like they tried as hard as they could to pack as much information in the character as they could in the first hour, so that like you felt like there was some kind of compelling reason to care about this person.
Right.
And it's like, look, guys, you have, in theory, you have a whole show to build the character out. You don't sit there and try to get me to like know this person in and out in the first 5 minutes.
Right. And that's very much what Warzone comes across, you know, and again, at the time when it first premiered, it was like, well, you know, this is kind of a little hokey, but I was also like, well, okay, you know, I know what JMS did with Babylon 5, and yeah, it's the first episode, so I'll cut them a little slack. You know, looking at it again, coming back to it as we are now, it's like it is as though it was made for suits who didn't get it.
I'm going to say yes. Because they totally ignored, I mean, absolutely avoided even thinking about the fact that people would watch this show because they were fans of JMS.
Right.
They completely ignored the fact that he had a following and those people would watch the show. They interfered with him putting the story together in a way that would have made sense to people watching the show, people who would have wanted to watch the show, and ended up making everyone, people who wanted to watch the show and people who just were doing drive-bys, ended up confusing everybody.
I don't know if they confused everybody. I think
they did. Come on. I got lost the first time, the first few episodes. And I was paying attention.
Well, I mean, yes, as the show went on, I could see I would agree with that because it's, you know, here, you know, again, in the original running order, I think The Long Road was the next one in. It's like in in Warzone, we're introduced to all these people, and then the next episode, we only see two of them.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, so that's there. And then the whole mysterious, with Darina, I thought there'd be one other. Oh, who is that? Oh, he'll show up when he's ready to show up. It's like, yes, okay, we know, he's the Techno Mage.
Mm-hmm.
We get
it. And you hated Techno Mages back then.
I did. I was cringing. It's like, oh, please. And I knew it was, I mean, we knew it was Galen. It's, you know, and then when they're fighting the Drock inside the Drock ship and he's, you know, appearing. And I mean, it makes sense that he's the guy that has their back, in essence, because he can disappear. But mm-hmm. it's still that whole kind of mysterious, weird, you know, we even get the flashback. Where Gideon, you know, the message comes in that's piggybacked on the message from the senator once the Excalibur's underway that tells them they need to go to SETI 4. And then Galen's voice pops in. It's like, don't you remember?
Again, Gideon, dead accurate. Dead yes, accurate on that, thank by the way.
Well, it's the baldness, too, on that one. That's I have to pick channel that
okay,
part of it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So and then you know, Gideon has Matheson trace the message back and quote unquote traces it to the place where the Cerberus was destroyed, and you know, as when Matheson hands him the paper, it says, "Oh, it comes from these coordinates." Gideon stares at us. Yeah, I know where that is. And then we get this flashback. So it's like you're saying, Brett, it's like they're just shoving all this stuff in there. It's like, what did mm-hmm. that? Why did I need to know that right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well,
it drives me nuts.
Yeah. So it's, and then part of it seems like it's setting up Trace to be the main character in the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. So, would you say this is an example of what not to do?
To a degree, I guess. Like I said, when it first came on, it was like, okay, I understand why they're doing it. And so people know, here's the captain, here's the dashing captain, here's his faithful first officer, here's the compassionate doctor. You know, Max Eilerson is the one that doesn't have any character in this episode, at least not the Max Eilerson that we come to know.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, he's ultra cautious. He says, the story of my life, I find this thing and I have to, you know, give it up because the bad guys are coming or whatever. And it just doesn't quite ring true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in fact, Trace is the one as when they realize that, you know, they send a shuttle over where the Drock had crashed and it gets shot down. And Trace is the one who says, well, these guys are hostile and they're coming for us and here's what we need to do to take care of it. Those are the things that seems to me that Max would be saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're in trouble. This is bad news. We need to do something now. And, you know, when everybody else complains, he'd be the one that's like, I don't intend to die today. But Trace is the whole hokey, oh, I got things to do this weekend, so I don't plan on dying.
Oh, come on. That's the plucky comic again, relief.
That's well right.
And again,
exactly.
a great impersonation. God, you are 3 for 3 tonight, man.
I've been practicing him all day, actually. That's my top secret truth.
I've been channeling Galaxy Quest. It's not a good thing to combine genres. Yeah,
well, it is.
Plucky comic relief.
He is. It is. Well, and they have a lot of screen time with him. You know, now he's listed in the credits as special guest star. And in the opening credits, there's no sign of Tracy Scoggins anywhere.
So, you know, I guess stuff like this, I think the approach I prefer as a fan is, you know, this is kind of what Straczynski did in B5 is that, you would every once in a while you'd get a episode that was heavy into the character of one character, you know, and that would give you more. I mean, you get little tidbits here and there, but like every once in a while you'd get one that was just hardcore on that character. And I prefer that approach to the approach of trying to get me to care about everybody at the same time and tell me everything you can. Like the writers analyzed every word on the piece of paper to make sure it packed everything they could in there in those 43 minutes. I hate that.
Yeah. And because that's the thing, there's very little room for character development. And I think what's there is as much attributable to the fact that, you know, as we know, they'd already been shooting episodes. So I think that the actors had a handle on who their characters were. So there's a couple moments between Matheson and Gideon that ring true for those characters. You know, I like the bit where, you know, Matheson, and again, it is that expository thing. Well, I know because I'm a member of PsyCorps, which they've already talked about with the senator dude. It couldn't have been that easy. But Gideon's response, and of course, part of this is the writer, but he says, look, you know, problems come when there's ambiguity. You know, you're the best first officer. You're my friend. No ambiguity. You know, you're on board. And you know, the mannerisms and the nonverbals. You know, okay, I can see Gideon saying that kind of stuff. That makes sense. The the mutiny at the very beginning, which, you know, I've read where Straczynski had problems with because he didn't think a crew would just up and mutiny because they went back to Earth or whatever, I thought was good because I also liked that bit where, you know, this was a bit of cliche. You know, I don't have to stop everybody. I've just got to stop you. You're the ringleader. But once Gideon takes that guy down, he just turns around and goes, okay, who's next? You know, and that to me is the epitome of Gideon's character. It's like, I'll take you all on one at a time. It doesn't matter. I know I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you don't believe me, I'll prove it to you. I don't have a problem with that. You know, and of course, nobody takes him up on it. And he's like, look, I'm not here to get you dead. Trust me on this. And I thought that was okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that was well handled.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I hear you.
So
you know, but at the end of the day, though, did it work for you or not? I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
You know, this time around, not so much. The first time around, yeah, it was okay. I worked with it, again, with the idea that the assumption that we get 5 years of Crusade and it would be an amazing, mind-blowing experience. So part of that was anticipation. This time around, yeah, not so much. You know, it had its moments. And it was okay. The guy who played the senator, man, I mean, he would have been perfect as a jarhead marine commando kind of guy, but zero inflection on anything that he was saying. So he was driving me crazy. Mm-hmm. And he did the good guy hang up too. After he finished talking with Gideon, he just, nobody says goodbye.
Nobody says goodbye. I hate that. That is pet peeve.
I think it's because you're watching them. The whole video phone conference, you don't say goodbye because you're looking at them. You just
I don't care. I still say goodbye.
What happened to common courtesy in the universe? You just say, even if it's, do you understand me, Captain? Carry on. And then you hang up. That's fine. But that's still at least, you know, over and out kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree. I will tell you.
We'll let's try an experiment. At the end of the podcast tonight, we'll all just stop talking.
Go. We'll just go.
And we'll just see how that goes over. That is and it's not just B5, it's all of them.
It is. It's the video conferencing. I mean, you're getting yelled at. You're getting chewed at by you know, a superior officer, and all of a sudden he says, talk to you later. Not gonna happen.
No.
I agree with Tim. I agree with Tim.
Yeah, thank you, brother. I'm not asking for them to say, very well, is there anything else? I hope you and the family are fine. Not even that, but just something to say, something polite to say, all right, Captain, you have your orders. We will talk again soon. Farewell. How hard is that?
It'll be something like, and the next time you do something like this without orders, you will pay the price. Do you understand me, Captain? Over.
Well, yeah, that would be fine too.
Saying over, I mean, and having
something
or dismissed. I mean, they, that's just. Yeah,
I'm done with you.
It's just rude.
Where this conversation's over. Something.
Yes, you right. Even if there is, and like, this conversation is over, Captain, and then you
have
hang
you
up.
Noticed? Have you noticed that half of those conversations ended with somebody with that person looking off to the side and nodding for somebody else to cut comms?
Well, sometimes, but not in this case. Not in this case with a senator, where they're being reassigned.
I see your point.
I do not see it as a valid argument, as big a deal as you're making it.
Okay, fine. Be that way. But speaking of farewells, there was one touching moment in there in Warzone that affected me then and affected me this time around. There's the Earth Force ship that's pursuing the Drock ship.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just professional soldiers, and they know they're all going to die because the ship's about to explode. You know, and here's your farewell. You know, the captain tells the communications officer, eject the beacon, the distress beacon, and whatever else. And he just says, let's hope they can finish what we started. And then it's a long shot of the ship exploding. But they all, you know, there's nobody freaking out or anything. They're all just, you know, this is it. This is our time. And that I think is very affecting. I like that. That was a good bit.
Okay. Hmm.
Alright.
So.
Fair enough, then.
Yeah, just trying to think else who else is in there that didn't. See, we saw Galen, and he was doing mysterious Galen things. Oh, then there was the Drock.
Yeah, what's your assessment of... I'm not going to say battle plans, because I don't really think that was a battle.
Yeah, it was just more like a skirmish.
Yeah.
You know, they got together, they started shooting, we shot back. You know, well, one of the things that I think I was surprisingly okay with the Drock soldier headgear, I guess because we had the one chief Drock that was there, and you saw his Drockness, shall we say? I just read all the rest of them as wearing helmets. You know, that if that wasn't their heads, that was a helmet. And underneath they'd be all scaly and you know, whatever else. Well,
Drocky.
Yeah, Drocky, exactly.
Yeah. So
okay.
It's kind of like it's the opposite of the Grand Poobah, right? Grand Poobah normally wears the helmet, and nobody else wears the helmet, and doesn't wear the helmet, everybody else wears the helmet.
Exactly. Yes, you got it.
Gotcha. He's Fred Flintstone, is what you're saying, with the Grand Poobah helmet.
Flintstone is, you know, but Fred is an everyman, you know, and the head chief Drock guy was, he was not a Fred Flintstone. He could speak English. He was end up talking with Gideon. And this did make me chuckle a little bit, where Gideon says, okay, yeah, we're going to ship you back to Earth, and if we don't find a cure, you'll be dead like everybody else. It's like, well, Matthew, how do you know the plague is going to kill him too? You know?
Mm-hmm.
But, and the other thing that I did like was when he was, when he was talking with Eilerson, Gideon was, and Gideon saying, okay, we got to, Eilerson, you're going to lead us to where the Drock ship has crashed. And Eilerson says, I don't think so. And Gideon says, okay, if you don't, then you can stay here and let the Drock take you. And Eilerson says, you're bluffing. And Gideon, of course, says, I never bluff. It's like, that's the perfect thing a bluffer would say. I loved that. I thought that was a great touch.
That is what a canny poker player says.
Right.
Who, me? Well, bluff? No, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, the other big lie, too. Yeah, the other big lie they say, oh, what's this game, poker? I've never played before.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah.
Very true. That's a good point. Alrighty then.
So that was...
What else there? What else, Tim?
Yeah,
I know you got more.
No, I think that's...
So what
I liked, I like the battle in space with the Drock ships, where they didn't have any voiceovers. It was just music. I thought that was effective. You know, I mean, that was a good play against type. Let's put it that way, you know, because we don't need to know what they're saying to know they're saying fire and whatever else.
Did the music in that battle scene work for you or not?
In that battle scene, I thought it did. Earlier on in the episode, when they first start shooting at the Drox soldiers on the ground, I didn't like it. It sounded like church organy spooky music. But the space battle ship, I thought was good. What's
they
that?
They were in a spooky ship.
No, this is before they got to the spooky ship.
Oh, before they got in the ship.
They were heading for the spooky caves.
Oh, that part.
Yeah. Was Scooby and Shaggy there? Because it was spooky?
Well, I was looking for them. I think actually the sculptures that the sculptures that Eilerson was painstakingly pushing at looked like Velma there. So
maybe did they have like the little eyes that like disappeared and like you all of a sudden you see like human eyes going back and forth?
Yes, right. Yeah, like in the painting they pull the eyes back.
Yeah, just curious.
God,
because it was spooky. It was spooky.
I got spooky. Nothing.
This like is what you get, folks. This is what you get. Yeah, this is what you get when you have me, who's medicated heavily for on cold medicine. I have no idea what I'm saying. I'm going to listen to this in about a week or so and wonder what the heck I was talking about.
Oh, that's great.
We're talking about Scooby-Doo. I can follow it. It's all good.
Yeah, Scooby-Doo is great.
I'm waiting for one of you guys to tell Mike to yank me off because I mean I don't know what the heck I'm saying at this point.
Phrasing.
Nah.
Okay. Nope. Right.
It's all good, baby.
Oh, right.
So you know, I think you know it's kind of a problematic episode when all is said and done.
I would love to find out why they felt this episode was necessary, because it doesn't this episode really start right after, like almost during the end of the attack, the initial attack?
Yes,
right.
Yes, exactly.
And, it makes no sense to put it at the end.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't at the end when it was originally aired. That's the whole point.
I know. That's
the whole thing. That's to me, it is the epitome of what of the Crusade legacy. It's an episode that Straczynski didn't want to write, did the best he could under the circumstances for reasons that were strictly at the behest of a network that wasn't quite sure what they were getting and didn't understand it, and then decided it wasn't what they wanted, and so they were kind of yanking it around. Which is the other part of it, which is ironic about that, is because they gave them extra money for the new uniforms and some better sets and the like.
And the new uniforms were awful?
You didn't like the new uniforms? Better than the bellhop? You like
bellhop? Which ones do you consider the new uniforms?
The new uniforms are the dark jackets with the patches on the arm and
right, the ones that the typical Deep Space Explorer. Those to me weren't the new ones. The bellhop ones were the quote new ones to me.
Well, they're the new ones because that's how they worked it in appearances and other deceit.
Right,
that's the whole thing, because the bellhop uniforms were the first uniforms designed for Crusade.
I like the black ones better.
Yeah, they're right. So that's the thing. It's like they get cooler uniforms. TNT gives them more money, and they still don't like the story. It's bizarre.
There
it's weird.
Really is no decent order to put these stories in without actually erasing several of them from the collective memory of mankind.
Right, right, and that's like I say. That's why Warzone is the epitome of the Crusade legacy. It's like, where does it belong? At the beginning, well, sure, okay, but you know, then we pick up Eilerson. I like the idea that they just grab these people and said, "Here you go," and you get started with it. That's, you know, I'm with Straczynski on this one. Racing the Night is a fantastic introduction to it all because it just puts you in the middle of it.
Hmm.
Anyway.
Green.
Sigh. Yes, green.
Okay, there you go.
You're killing me.
What else we got?
Anything else we want to talk about?
We are going to rue the day.
Rue?
Yes. Who says Rue anymore?
Who says Rue anymore?
Of actually says that.
You have emails, right?
Yeah, I got some emails.
Okay, we're going to read some emails. We're going to come right back and pay attention to our listeners to make up for this train wreck. and Brett's meds.
Yes, please.
So, you're still hanging on to that tiny thread of denial, trying to convince yourself that sci-fi has nothing whatsoever to do with your life. Well, you better think again, Sparky. That tiny cell phone has no basis in Starfleet communicators. Those hands-free earpieces now used by virtually everybody didn't come down from the ear of Lieutenant Uhura. And that cute little Rumba vacuum cleaner that you use far too infrequently wasn't hijacked off an Imperial Star Cruiser. Nah, not a chance. Because if it were true, then you would be forced to turn on that Flash Gordon-inspired box on your desk called a computer and listen to sliceofsci-fi.com, the XM satellite radio show that will turn your sci-fi into reality.
I think in order to continue to entertain everyone with Brett on meds, I think you should read the email and Brett should give the answer, the first answer.
Yes, I think that's a great idea. All right.
Y'all better have your finger on the little bleep button.
no one cares. Hey,
this is a good one because I think Brett was absent the time we talked about Path of Sorrows. This comes from Nan, who writes, "I would like to agree with both of you, Tim and Summer, about the power of a stranger's forgiveness. As Summer says, a stranger doesn't have the power to forgive you when you need to forgive yourself. However, without going into details, I know how difficult it can be to get out of the rut of being unable to forgive yourself and how much of a jump start it can be to have someone else forgive you. It really does not mean that you can forgive yourself, but it can get you out of that mindset and onto a different path that can lead to self-forgiveness. As Tim says, they would probably have to deal with the issues further later on, but just having that little push under the right path would be the start needed for Gideon and Matheson. Galen obviously needed more."
Oh, do I get to respond first to this?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Of course you do. That was the rule.
Are you kidding me? Seriously? did they need a counselor on the ship? What are you talking about? What kind of mamby-pamby-ville are you living in? Okay, that's my response. That's all I got.
Maybe that was the thing. Maybe the alien was like Counselor Troy, who got stuck in a bubble and they just dropped her off on a planet someplace.
That would explain the telepathic ability to peer to peer into their pain.
I'm just saying. It sounds like somebody was missing Counselor Troy that week, and you're on the wrong show. Get your own show. Wait, you had your own show. There you go.
I thought it was there a pretty good episode. I liked it.
No, I'm not saying I didn't like the episode. I just had a problem with that one particular component of it.
Yes. No, I understand. I understand.
Right. This particular issue is the equivalent of how Tim feels about Day of the Dead. You know, I understand his abject rage and refusal to budge on Day of the Dead.
No, and I get it. I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. I don't understand why, but I understand you. Why you? I feel that same. Oh, hell no.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Jakar says, says to Londo, I can, my people can never forgive yours, but I can forgive you. Yeah. Right. Okay. Excellent. That's good. All right. This comes to us from Gail, also known as Raven from the Green Room. Gail writes, I have just recently found the Babylon podcast and I'm slowly working my way through the archives. I was wondering if during the 5 years you've been doing the podcast, you'd ever talked about a place we lovingly refer to as the Green Room. This was an early chat room named from the basic black background with green letters that existed off a corner of www.babylon5.com. It was part of the Babylon 5 fan club, but had quite the personality of its own. People gathered from all walks of life, computer programmers, lawyers, network engineers, college instructors, law librarians, the list goes on. We hailed from all over the world and grew to friendships far beyond just being B5 fans. Many of us are still in touch. Many of us have managed to travel to meet in person, often at conventions. There was even a marriage between two of the regular chatters, the ceremony including a reading from Jakar's Declaration of Principles. Anyway, I could go on and on. Please let me know if you're interested and I can expound further or contact you with others of the same group. Keep podcasting. I'll catch up to you eventually. So,
all right. So as the official first responder of this, I will say welcome to our podcast, even though you've been listening to us for a little while. I've only been doing this for about a year already?
A little
more.
Holy
cow. Really? Wow. Okay. Well,
it seems like a lifetime, doesn't it?
It really does. It really does. It's at least, you know, 6 or 7 dozen bottles of Jack Daniels later. But welcome to our podcast. I have never heard of the Green Room. But then again, I spent most of my time over at Midwinter, which at the Taon time, well, it's Midwinter now. It's called Hyperion back then. And that's where I spent most of my time as a B5 fan and never visited the actual B5.com. Oddly enough, I was rewatching some of the episodes, the later episodes of Babylon 5, and I noticed there was a URL in some of the last season 5 episodes. They had a little URL at the bottom, you know, go to Babylon5.com. So here I was a few years ago looking, and wouldn't you know, it's no longer there. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing if you'd like to restart the Green Room or the Black Room or have a red door and paint it black, anything you'd like to do, they could probably get that domain name for cheap these days. There you go. That's my official response.
Well, I think Babylon 5...
Talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah, I think Babylon5.com within the past year was resurrected by Warner Brothers or obtained by somebody affiliated with Warner Brothers. Not sure what that means, but in conjunction with them taking over the Babylon 5 Facebook page? Yeah, I'm thinking there's something in the works. But anyway,
Interesting. Yeah. You're right. There is a Babylon5.com when it goes to Warner Brothers now. And
yeah, it didn't before. And I think it's the original old ancient HTML and funky animated GIF page, isn't it?
It does have an animated GIF, but it does have a streaming video that it does play. So click here for Babylon 5 news alerts, and it's going to be from 1997. Look, the show's over. You know, I don't know.
But no, I remember it back way, way back in the day. There were a lot of different chat rooms. Most of which, the popular ones, were on, and I'm dating myself here, AOL and Genie, which I didn't have access to. So I was like, screw you guys, I'm going over here. And I hung out at rec.arts.tv, which by then had been rec.arts.tv.sf, and then it was .sf.moderated, or sf.babylon5.moderated.
I remember when they went to moderated,
green,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah. And I just
I
kept
remember
following,
that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just kept following the Usenet posts because I didn't have access to the CompuServe, Genie, whatever it was back then that other folks were using. And the other chat rooms were, for me, problematic because they never had clients for Mac or for Linux. You know? So I just had to shit. I will just stick with the news group, Usenet postings, and there was much rejoicing.
Yay.
You know what's funny? I totally forgot about Usenet, but back when I was first hitting the Hyperion, and reading up on the B5 universe and going all hardcore geek on it, I was working at the University of Arizona in Tucson. Ding. I would go to, we had access to Usenet news groups, and I believe somewhere out there, if you search for me on Usenet, you will find posts I put in the B5 universe, and the Star Trek universe for that matter. But holy cow, that's a blast from the past. You're right, Summer. I did do that.
And you know what else is cool?
Wow.
The constructor of that email, Raven, is in the chat room right now.
Hi, Raven.
Hi, Raven.
She's
if you see a red door, you can paint it black.
Like, yeah, and if you're in the green room, you can. I don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, if you're so interested, you could give us a history of the green room. I don't know, because hey, we talked to the B5 knitters, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Absolutely. We had Sandy Bruckner on as well.
I wonder if Sandy knows much about the green room. We could ask her.
Yes, we could. Yes, we could.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see here. We've got another email. Okay. This comes to us from Jim. Been listening to your show for a long time, though I confess I had to quit for a while as your geek stream was far too thick for me. In any case, I only have a small observation. It is generally agreed upon that the Star Wars prequels are terrible. I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that Lucas didn't have anyone telling him no. The jackass studio suit can, at times, act as the irritant that creates a pearl. While I would like to think that Joe Straczynski would not become self-indulgent, we cannot be assured of that. The phrase art from adversity exists for a reason. I think James is referring to our conversations about rebooting the Babylon 5 universe.
Mm.
Brett?
So I'll be honest with you, I listened to every word that you just said, Tim. I don't understand what he's asking us. What's he want to know?
I think his comment is that as precedent, look at what Lucas did with the Star Wars prequels. And yeah. Jim is under the impression that they are generally terrible. And his thinking is that the reason that they're not good is because Lucas didn't have any restrictions placed upon him by which he could do creative things.
Okay.
And his thought is that the same thing would happen to Joe Straczynski. He would get free reign to do whatever he wanted to do to make new Babylon 5, and it would blow because he didn't have anybody looking over his shoulder telling him what to do.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. So here's my general thought on that one. So as I recall, the reason why Mr. Straczynski wanted to be producer, writer, blah, 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 was because he wanted to have that control. And he, honestly, you would have gotten exactly what you would have gotten, and you would get exactly what you get. I don't think that he would have compromised an iota more than he had to. I think the few compromises he made, Kefler being the biggest example of one, who he lovingly killed off at the end of the season 3, as I recall.
So two, but yeah.
Season 2, right. End of season 2. you know, I don't think you would have gotten a whole lot different from him than what we saw. I agree with you that I will sit there and say that Lucas suffers from two things: a complete lack of anybody willing to tell him no, and a complete overinflated, overindulged ego. And I don't think you find those in Mr. Straczynski. I don't think he has been that big a deal in Hollywood to get that big ahead and get that kind of I can do whatever the hell I want, nobody can tell me no, or the fans will buy complete crap. Because really, that's what Lucas told. That's what Lucas told you with episodes 1, 2, 3 in Star Wars is,
pretty
I nice. Can put out crap, and the fans will take it. I don't think – I think Straczynski knows well enough to know that if he puts out crap, it'll get canceled. And there you go. That's my two cents.
I have a different take on Lucas, and I'll get to that later. But I think where we saw the issue of being constrained by the studio, I think we see that with Crusade, and I think we saw that with The Lost Tales. And even though he was excoriated at the time for his comments, when JMS said that he's not going to do any more Babylon 5 unless it's a big budget film and he's got money to do it, I think ultimately time has proved him right. And as much as I enjoyed Lost Tales, it seems small. And Babylon 5 was nothing if not grand. It was large and it was mythic and it was epic. And you can't do that on a small budget. And one of the things that, you know, in all the interviews that we've done with the cast and crew was with Babylon 5, they were pretty much just kind of left alone. You know, part of it was the geographic location, but the other part of it was the fact that they made this television show under budget and on time. And at that point, the studio doesn't care what you're doing, really, as long as you're on budget and on time. And that's what they always were. So what was there to complain about?
Yeah, I chalk it up to Straczynski had a lot more television experience even before he became a showrunner.
Yes.
And television, just from hearing people talk about how literally how short the memories are of TV execs, you have to have a well-defined, a fine-tuned internal bullshit meter. Because if you're producing bullshit, the TV execs aren't going to buy it.
Yes.
You know?
Movies
you might be able to get away with because you're making the movie. That movie's not going to be seen for a year and a half. You're doing TV, that's going to be on in 2 weeks or a month. You know, that's... there's just a faster turnaround. And the fact that Lucas made so much money so quickly and he surrounded himself with people who were going to agree with every word he said because that meant money, more money for them instead of having people around him who would actually tell him the truth. Like, George, you've gained 200 pounds in the past 2 weeks. You think you ought to do something about that?
But it's true. Yes. It's completely true.
I feel a little more charitable to George. You know,
I adore the first trilogy. That's why the second trilogy pisses me off so much. I know. I take that back. I liked what he did at the end of Phantom Menace. That the whole thing was a head fake by Palpatine.
Yes.
That was crafty. That was sneaky. I liked it. I liked that.
Thank you for catching that. I had to tell people about that, and they were all like, "What?"
No. At the very end, when you realize that the entire movie,
the whole blockade was generated by Palpatine,
scheme to put him in power. Yes. I'm like, well done,
right.
Machiavelli was.
Hold on, really?
What? Yes.
You guys, you didn't see that in the first 10 minutes?
No.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Yeah, no.
Let me rephrase that. I realized that he was a scheming, manipulating, conniving troll. When you reach the end and he's kissing up to Amidala and young Anakin, and you realize this man started a galactic war and devastated half of two planets just so he could be boss. OMG.
Yes. Yes.
It was the scale. It was the lengths that to which he had done. And literally, to achieve one tiny bit of leverage that he would later leverage into more power. I'm like, oh my God.
Right.
That's nicely done. And you didn't get that in the next two movies. The next two movies were like Twilight. Oh my God, really?
Yeah. See, and here's the thing. This is where I think it all goes wrong for me, is that Lucas is more enamored with how you make the images on the film than necessarily. Yes. I think he gets too caught up with that and loses sight of the story.
Him and James Cameron.
You know, Straczynski is the opposite. And I think that's, you know, even given his frustration with Lost Tales, I think part of the reason that it works so well for me is that the characters he has are so strong. So when it's just Galen and Sheridan, in essence, sitting in chairs in a black room, it still is powerful. When Galen says, Genghis Khan and Adolf Hitler were just boys playing with toys and they grew up to become monsters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I remember that.
You know? And it's like he picked the right actors to deliver the right words in the right moments. And that's what, you know, in the Star Wars prequels, you have so little of that. And the thing is, though, those aren't necessarily constraints of budget and time or having a studio saying whatever. You know, the Lost Tales didn't meet JMS's vision. There's no doubt. I mean, they scrapped the third story with Garibaldi strictly because of the money. But he still somehow makes it work.
Mm-hmm. And even though it worked, his attitude was, this could have been better. I don't want to do this again.
Whoa.
Oh, we just lost Summer.
We lost R2. Sorry.
That's only appropriate.
Yeah, right. All right. She is gone. So that's okay. We can sit there and say, damn you, Lucas, for killing our movie. And thank you, Joe, for making a great show.
Yeah,
there exactly. You go. That's how we'll end. That's how we'll end it. Are we out of time? Are we done?
Yes, we are out of time.
I will sit there and say on behalf of Summer, I don't know
what our voice number is. No, we're good guys. We don't say anything at all.